So anyway, so I'm David Hemenway. I'm going to talk about three things, mostly about what we know about the risks and benefits of guns in the home. So it's just be a summary of, quick summary of what we know. And then along the way, I just want to talk about the National Violent Death Reporting System, how important it is. And then at the end, I have a minute and a half about CCW laws, which is concealed carry laws. No relationships. Anyway, there's lots of evidence that where there's more guns, there's more death. There's more homicide because there's more gun homicide, more suicide because there's more gun suicide, more unintentional gun fatalities because there's more guns. Just to give you, you know, some flavor, this is young kids, 5 to 14, K through 8, basically. This is the United States versus the other developed countries. So this is the 25 industrialized democracies. And we have by far the most guns and by far the weakest gun control laws. And what do you find is that our unintentional firearm death rate is 10 times higher for these kids. Our gun suicide rate is about 8 times higher. Our gun homicide rate is about 13 times higher. And you can see our non-gun homicide, non-gun suicide aren't much different. Here, if you just look across the United States, look at states with a lot of guns versus states with few guns. The states with few guns have tough gun control laws, with a lot of guns have very weak gun control laws. And we've run these things. Matt Miller's done a lot of work about controlling for everything you could possibly think of. But the numbers just speak for themselves, is that unintentional firearm death rates, it's about 9 times higher in the high gun states. Again, this is 5 to 14-year-olds. These are kids. The gun suicide rate, almost 12 times higher. The gun homicide rate, only about 2.5 times higher. And one of the reasons the gun homicide rate, I believe, is not so much higher in the high gun states is because crime guns, homicide guns, travel. And they come from the high gun states to the low gun states, where suicide guns and unintentional firearm guns don't travel. But what I want to talk about is not this. I just want to talk about what's the cost and benefits to you to having your gun in your home. Because a lot of these people who are killed, particularly the homicide victims, are killed by somebody else's guns outside the home. So I'm talking about your gun in your home, and what do we know? And if you look at I want to talk about the data we know, what we know about accidents and suicide and assaults and intimidation on the risk side, and about deterrence and thwarting of crime or self-defense gun use on the benefit side. In terms of unintentional gun deaths, it turns out we've done a really careful study, Kathy Barber, at our center, and it turns out vitals and WSCARs are not very good data on unintentional firearm deaths. You cannot trust those data. You can trust entirely the NVDRS, the National Violent Death Reporting System, data on unintentional firearm deaths, but it's only in 18 states. And the problem with the vitals and WSCARs is that they miss a lot of youth accidents. They count them as homicides when two friends shoot each other unintentionally, and they overcount the adult accidents. Often it's unclear whether it's a homicide or a suicide. They put them in an unknown category, and somehow they end up in the accidents. Great thing about the NVDRS is that it gives you lots of evidence about circumstances, including whether or not it was at home or not, the problem, and that's what we care about. Two-thirds of unintentional firearm gun deaths are at home. And what we know is that, as opposed to vitals, which says the median age is about 30, we know the median age is really about 23, the young kids are being shot by somebody else. The older adults are being shot, shooting themselves on unintentional firearm deaths. And who is shooting young children? And typically it's the best friend or an older brother. That's who you really have to worry about. And who are the shooters in other inflicted unintentional gun deaths? They are incredibly young. Over 80% are under the age of 24. And again, you're older. Brother. And so there was a consensus of experts, 34 injury prevention experts, were asked to prioritize home health hazards. And it was a stealthy technique. And what did they decide? That firearms in the home was the most significant health hazard in the home. In terms of suicide, the evidence, I can't go through all the evidence. The evidence is simply overwhelming that a gun in the home is a risk factor for suicide. If you're interested, go to our website, Harvard Injury Control Research Center, and click on Means Matter, and it'll give you all the different evidence. There's no question there's a lot of psychological evidence that means should matter, because a lot of deaths are spontaneous. There's a whole lot of case control studies, maybe 12 to 18, depending on how you count, and they all find a gun in the home as a risk factor for completed suicide. Why? Because guns are so lethal. There's a lot of ecological studies, cross-sectional studies, time series studies. Any ones that use a good measure of gun prevalence find that where there's more guns, there's more suicide because there's more gun suicide. There's now a number of studies showing that why do gun owners have higher rates of suicide? It's not because they are more depressed. It is not because they are more suicidal. It's because when they are depressed or suicidal, instead of taking lots of pills or cutting themselves, they shoot themselves, and the case fatality rate's over 90%. And again, a consensus of experts, here's international experts, they say, what can we do to reduce suicide prevention? They say, there's only two things we know that work, and one of them is restrict access to lethal means. So if you want to do something which we know works, this is one of the two things you can do. In terms of gun assaults and homicides, in terms of risk factors in the home, it turns out almost, you know, the large majority of homicides occur outside the home, so having a gun and not having a gun in the home doesn't matter. Most homicides occur with somebody else's gun, not your gun. But what we do know, again, from NDVDRS, is that the majority of children killed in homicides are killed in the home. The majority of older adults killed in homicides are killed in the home. And the majority of women killed in homicides are killed in the home. And the one place we have good evidence is that a gun in the home is a risk factor for femicide, for female homicide victimization. We don't know about any other age group or children, but there's really good evidence of that. For example, here's a case control study, just giving an example, of cases where women murdered by an intimate partner. Of those cases, 65% had a gun in the home. Controls were other battered women who had not been murdered by an intimate partner, only 24%. Huge differences for case control studies. We also know that there's intimidation with guns in the home, a real problem. Guns are often used to intimidate, particularly it's a male gun, and they're intimidating women. In one study of battered women, for example, if the male had a gun, in two-thirds of the time, they had used the gun against the battered women to scare the woman, to threaten, to harm the woman. And it is true, in 7% of all these cases, the woman had used the gun in self-defense, but basically only after the batterer is using the gun against her, and so sometimes she actually gets to use it against them. She's better off without a gun. Now, what's the evidence about the good things about a gun? Why do you want a gun in the home? And it's really two reasons: deterrence and thwarting crimes. And basically for deterrence, there's really not been any decent study that says that guns deter crime. There's been surveys of criminals, and sometimes they say we'd rather not face an armed victim, but they also say if we think we're going to face an armed victim, we're more likely to arm ourselves. And some of them say, facing an armed victim is an exciting challenge for us. So it's... And the one good study about burglaries found that where there's more guns in the communities, there was not less burglary, but actually more burglary, because burglary is one of the things, it's good for criminals, for burglars to steal. How about thwarting crime? There have been a number of studies of self-defense gun use, unfortunately not very recently. As far as we know, Harvard Injury Control Research Center is the only study that really ever asked open-ended questions about self-defense gun use. We asked a lot of questions when you said, yes, you had a self-defense gun use on national surveys, but then we said, tell us your story. And even though there's social desirability responses, this is something you want to look good about, when we analyzed what they actually said, it turned out that the majority of reported self-defense gun uses were actually just escalating arguments. They were not a bad guy's coming in, it was just I'm having an argument with somebody and they yell at me so I get my gun. And these are these are socially undesirable and they are criminally illegal uses of guns. And then the issue is, what about how good is gun use, is guns for protection? Is this really a good thing? And the answer is there are lots of other forms of self-defense, and there's not many good studies on this, but it seems like there are other forms of self-defense which are at least as good, if not better, in protecting against injury. Now, it looks like guns are uniquely good at protecting property, but not injury. This is just a slide showing how rare self-defense gun use is, at least in the National Crimes Victimization Surveys. You know, in one study of over 1,100 sexual assaults, only one person said they'd ever used a gun in self-defense. In terms of effectiveness, this is the percent of victims who are physically injured after doing self-defense. And less than 1% who called the police were injured, less than 2% who ran away were injured, over 2% who had threatened with a gun were injured. And overall, it looked like threatening with a gun is okay, but it's not like uniquely good. There are lots of other ways you can protect yourself, like calling police, running away, using a baseball bat, whatever. Why aren't guns so effective? They're very lethal, but the problem in terms of effectiveness and self-defense is that, you know, in any sort of real-world possible situation where something may be happening, you're not sure, it's ambiguous, or something is happening, you got confusion, you got stress and fear, your heart rate skyrocket. It's very easy in such a case to act unwisely, as police often do, who are well-trained. It's difficult to use the gun effectively. When you have a lot of adrenaline, it's probably really good for fighting physically and for flighting, for running away. It's not very good at carefully aiming a gun and pulling the trigger and hitting something which is moving right where you want to hit. And so what most gun aficionados basically say, if you read the literature, is a gun in the home is not very good for self-defense unless you are incredibly well-trained and not just target shooting, but what to do in these possibly stressful situations. There's data about who actually gets shot by guns. This is not all the benefits and all the costs, but it's interesting who gets shot by a gun in the house. I can tell you it's not intruders. It's overwhelmingly accidents of people you know, assaults against people you know, typically wives, and suicides. That's who. Four times more likely to have an accident with a gun than to shoot somebody who might be an intruder. And so the conclusion basically is that certainly the average person, we know a gun in the home is a risk factor for unintended shooting. It's clearly a risk factor for suicide. There's very good information that it's a risk factor for intimidation of women and for femicide. By contrast, there's really not any good evidence that there are anything close to commensurate benefits of a gun in your home. So that's why when you have experts together like the American Academy of Pediatrics, they always conclude, they tell parents who possess guns, remove them from the home, especially handguns. And this is a reason why Judy will talk about how the NRA is not happy with either the facts or the conclusions from the facts. Let me talk for 2 seconds about CCW laws. These are concealed carry laws. A lot of states in the past 25 years have moved from may issue to shall issue. This means the police chief the police chief has some discretion about who they'll give guns to and permits to, and shall issue you don't. As long as you pass the background checks, the police chief has to say you have to be given a permit. And there have been now, I'm an economist, and these are all by economists, basically, there's been about 28 econometric studies looking at the effects of these laws. And these are all summarized, again, if you want to see them in our website, if you look under bulletins. And the problem with the laws, with the studies, is that they're completely inconsistent. They tell you nothing, because some say one thing, some say another. One of the things you should know is that there's no simple relationship between the laws and any crime. So if you just say, here's a law, how's the effect on crime, you can't find anything. It's only when you add lots of control variables that you can see an effect. And it's only using particular models that you can see an effect. And depending on what control variables you use and what models you use determines whether or not you'll argue that guns, these laws increase crime, reduce crime, or don't have any effect on crime. And I just think this whole little industry has made economists and econometricians look bad. I mean, it just part of the reason is we don't understand crime very well. We can't predict it very well. Crime moves in waves, and we don't have good models for waves. And the other thing you should know is that the original model, it's got all the publicity by John Lott. He found that more guns. He didn't find more guns. He found that moving to shall issue laws reduced crime. Nothing to do with how many guns there really were. That's what he found. When you extend his exact model for more years, as more years became available and more states changed their laws, there was no effect at all in his model. So he had to change his models. in order to find it. The National Academy of Sciences, this is something I agree with. They said, basically, we have no idea whether or not these laws do anything or are good or bad. We have no idea. They may be bad, they may be good, in terms we don't know. And I would argue you shouldn't expect a big effect on overall crime, since only a very small percentage of the population gets permits, maybe 1% to 2%. Some of them are already carrying without a permit. And those who get permits are not at high risk for either being perpetrators of crime or being victims of crime. So arming them a little bit more doesn't seem to have a big effect on overall crime. Who's getting these permits? Typically people who are white, people who live in suburban and rural areas, people who are middle-aged and older adults, people with higher incomes. These are not the people either committing violent crimes or being perpetrators of violent crimes. So what's my conclusion? I could have given this conclusion, you know, anytime, any day, without any data, without anything, is that we should have a better data system. You really should support NVDRS. That's our best hope to at least understand a little bit what's going on. And it's now, again, it's not even in the majority of states. And you need funding for research. There's no funding out there, basically. It's a crime. A little funding. Thank you.